Hello, I'm Trey Marone, and welcome to the West Virginia EduCast. On today's episode, our topic is back to school, lessons on learning and teacher success from a kindergarten teacher. I know you're all familiar with Robert Fulghum's book, All I Really Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. Well, we're going to put that theory to the test in today's podcast when we visit with today's guest, West Virginia Teacher of the Year candidate, kindergarten teacher, Amber Nichols. We'll also be joined in this episode, it's a back-to-school edition, we're calling it, of the West Virginia EduCast by nationally board-certified teacher turned Bowles Rice attorney, Leanne Wilson. Amber and Leanne will share with us their experiences from the classroom and the courtroom in looking at the post-COVID education landscape and measuring teacher success. Amber Nichols teaches kindergarten at Eastwood Elementary and joins us today as our state is in the midst of bustling back-to-school preparations. Amber is Monongalia County's 2022 Teacher of the Year and is a finalist for the 2023 West Virginia Teacher of the Year. Amber's a 21-year teaching veteran and brings an unbridled positivity and joy to the classroom. She serves as a mentor teacher for future teachers, and she's on the leadership, curriculum, and behavior intervention teams at Eastwood Elementary as well. Today, Amber will share with us some things she's learned in her teaching career, and she'll offer us her opinion on moving education in West Virginia forward in 2023 and beyond. Leanne Wilson, a member of the Bowles Rice Education Law Team and a former teacher, joins us as well to share her experiences from the classroom to the courtroom, turning her passion for the language into a 10-year career in teaching. Leanne taught Spanish to students from kindergarten to college. A member of the Bowles Rice Education Law Team, Leanne focuses her work primarily on issues related to higher education, K-12 education, and general litigation. Using skills learned as an educator, Leanne strives to present complicated material to clients and other attorneys in a clear and concise manner. Welcome, Amber and Leanne.
Thanks for having me, Trey.
Yes, Trey. Thanks for having us.
Well, Amber, let's start with you. In your teaching career, what would you say is the greatest lesson you've learned from students?
That's a great question. I have a daughter who has battled a very difficult illness for the past few years. It isn't uncommon for me to spend the night in the PICU and then come to kindergarten the next morning. So I would say that the lesson my students teach me is absolutely resiliency. I know that my students deserve 110% of my strength, my passion, my creativity. To short them in any way would be a travesty. Teaching, in my opinion, is absolutely the highest responsibility. The same could be said for learning. So our students come to us with such heavy plates. I've had students who have recently lost a parent, deal with abusive situations, neglect. I've had students who are the product of rape and incest. I've had students who were removed from their homes the night before. Just really heavy, heavy stories. Our expectations for our students remain high, although their situations at times are difficult at best. Resiliency is certainly modeled on my end, and it's a direct result of the lessons I've learned from my students.
You know, Leanne, you know, I'd like to hear from you too, but I was just sitting here thinking how true it is that when those students come into the classroom, not necessarily even for the year, but even on a day-to-day basis, you really don't know what kind of issues that they've been dealing with. And it's so great to hear the respect that you have for their resiliency.
Yeah, I agree with you, Trey, absolutely. And I agree with Amber that resiliency is a critical skill for students and teachers. My dad had a saying, he always said, for those who persevere, in the end, it comes together. And for me, perseverance and resiliency really go hand in hand. So, and I also think what skill could be more important as we kind of have come out and have a new world order, if you will, post-COVID. So our students and teachers who can really learn resiliency, I think they can find their way forward in any situation. And I love what Amber said about having a high bar for success regardless of circumstances. Some of our students in West Virginia, as I remember, face what seemed like insurmountable odds. I will never forget learning, and this was about midway through a school year, that a student in one of my classes was covered in rat bites, and we couldn't tell because they were covered under his clothes. And his house was infested, and they would bite him at night. And it's hard to describe what some of our students face. So I really think that we have to lead by example, that hard things can be overcome, and that we can still have success in our life. Trey, by the way of full disclosure, I have to tell you, I used to teach with Amber, and I had the very great joy of having her as a teacher for my two sons in kindergarten. And I will tell you, because I've seen it in action, Amber teaches resiliency and she teaches hard work. She didn't accept any work that wasn't a best effort. And that included a coloring sheet, even a house in kindergarten. When they came up to her with that sheet, it had to be their best work. And so I'll never forget her teaching kids to have pride in their work and to put their best effort forth every single time.
Wow, such stories. I mean, about resiliency, you know, I mentioned about you don't really know, you know, what students bring to the classroom when they show up. And just hearing the stories that you two have just provided in this little snippet here today, you know, just really gives me pause to think about day to day in my own life. The things sometimes that I think that I have to push my way through don't hold a candle to some of the things that, these young little students are dealing with. So good for both of you. Fantastic. Well, that kind of took me down a second. So let's lift it up just for a minute if we can. Can you share maybe one of your funniest stories from the classroom, Amber?
Oh my goodness, every day in kindergarten is a funny story. You know, everyone should get to spend their life with a five-year-old. It's the perfect place to be. So one of the funniest things that comes to my mind is I had just returned from maternity leave. And of course, my students were so excited to see me and they just ran up and gave me a big hug. And one of my students said, "Mrs. Nichols, you don't look all the way pregnant anymore." And I love their honesty. I mean, who wouldn't want to spend their day with people who are brutally honest like that? It was perfect. It was perfect.
Truly unfiltered. Those kindergartners yes. are, aren't they? Well, what's the biggest challenge that you perceive for this coming year? We mentioned COVID and, you know, working through COVID the last couple of years, still out there. Of course, we've learned through resiliency that we can survive COVID and we can, you know, persevere and still make things happen in the education world, but it's not the same as it used to be. So what do you see as the biggest challenge for the upcoming 22-23 school year?
Yeah, I am so excited to enter the 22-23 school year and get back to somewhat of a normal learning environment. I really feel like the biggest challenge will be cleaning up the pieces, per se, in the social and emotional health world following COVID. Emotional health has to be more than just a talking point for us. We're seeing such deficits, and no one by any means is shocked by the deficits that we're seeing here. But what do we do about it? You know, we need to make it more than just a talking point. You know, this was the first year in my 21 years of teaching kindergarten that I had to explicitly teach students how to play with one another. And, you know, I had to model and teach the act of play. Teachers everywhere are being tasked with filling in social and emotional learning gaps on top of an already full plate. So I plan to continue working closely with families. You know, I think that's where it happens, where it starts, you know, opening communication and working with families on social and emotional concepts, along with academic knowledge, of course. And I will absolutely advocate every chance that I get for mental health services to be readily available for all of our students. I'm lucky to teach at a school that uses responsive classroom, which is a social and emotional learning approach to teaching and discipline. So we value social and emotional learning 50% and academics 50%. So it's equal. We focus our first 6 weeks on relationship building and setting routines and rules, so students feel like there's an active participant in a safe environment. We're also really blessed here in Montgomery County to have Second Steps, which is a social and emotional learning curriculum that really teaches conflict resolution, emotional regulation, empathy, and self-respect. Providing safe learning spaces is important now than ever, and we just really need to make social and emotional health a more than just a talking point.
Well, you mentioned when you first started talking, I'll be honest, and you talked about deficit. Of course, deficits, mm-hmm. my mind immediately went to, you know, educationally, you know, as far as, you know, our, you know, however we're measuring our successes. And then you start talking about all these other things and it just hits home. I mean, even socially, I mean, at that age, you know, the socialization that occurs in kindergarten and just getting routines and getting yourself to the lunchroom and back in an orderly fashion and knowing when you can do this and when you can do that. I mean, what skills, I mean, the deficits, you recognize deficits even in that part of the learning environment and have picked up on those. And to say that you had to kind of teach students how to play again. Wow. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. It really is. You know, you think about 2020 and these kids that I'm getting in kindergarten were born in 2017. So they were three, you know, when COVID started, that critical socialization age. And, you know, we were at home. And, you know, that chance for socialization just wasn't there. So it's been mind-boggling, the things that we've had to explicitly teach.
Well, so, and some of the things that I think we forget just in general, I mean, you've highlighted them, I think they've come to surface, but we forget those values of the educational system. I think sometimes they get lost completely in the shuffle. Leanne, I mean, what about it?
Well, I would just echo Amber's opinion that mental health for students and teachers has to be a goal going forward. Mental health has truly proven itself to be a post-pandemic need, a critical need. And I think that overall, everyone just seems like they're recognizing more and more that mental health has to be a component of overall health. Schools, just like workplaces, can be the most productive when mental health is valued. So just as work-related stress can be a major cause of poor productivity and errors, the same is true with respect to our students. That's why I really just agree with Amber that getting kids the tools to deal with stressors and other types of demands that they have can only help them and help them be productive and happy in school.
Well, and the things that you two have just mentioned, I mean, give a real good picture, I think, to our listeners, if they're not already aware of it, of how many different skill sets you have to be a teacher. And even particularly in the kindergarten classroom is a whole unique set of skill sets, all very, very impressive. And, you know, it makes me think about, you know, In just West Virginia school laws and in the school systems, you know, school districts are required to compare qualifications of applicants for classroom teaching positions. And there's, you know, there's about, I think, 11 factor, or maybe 9 factors and 11 things that come into play when they're making those decisions. But most of these criteria are very measurable and definite. You know, have you got a certification in the area? Are you nationally board certified? You know, you may have so many years of experience and seniority. There's just different things that are fairly easily to measure your academic experience and things. But one of the most important criteria in that process that school districts use, and they're required by law to use, isn't so specific. There's one category that's called other measures or indicators upon which the qualifications of the applicant may be fairly judged. Well, you guys have talked about so many things other than, you know, what was my GPA? I mean, how well did my students perform in the last job I had? So, in applying that factor to compare applicants for teaching positions, classroom teaching positions, you know, superintendents and boards are free to decide for themselves what other measures or indicators of qualifications they're going to use in making that decision. So, based on your recognized success as a teacher, what other measures or other indicators of qualifications do you think school districts might look for in a classroom teacher candidate in order to attract and keep excellent teachers in the classroom?
So I have, you know, 20 plus years in the field, and I've had the opportunity to host so many interns from WVU. We get a year-long intern, which is great. And I serve as a mentor to teachers. I think that the most important, you know, other measure or indicator of an aspiring teacher's qualifications truly is immeasurable. I think you just can't measure certain things, right? The most important, number one, is a love for kids. And that's all kids of every background, socioeconomic status, race, gender, belief system. You know, you have to love all kids and want to see them succeed. That's number one. Next, I believe a good teacher should feel extremely passionate about their content. Our current State Teacher of the Year, Brian Casto, is a West Virginia history teacher. And when you speak with him, you can literally feel the passion for his content. And the same goes for me. I am probably overly passionate, overly geeky about phonemic awareness, phonics, reading comprehension strategies. It's what I read on my off time. It's what I watch YouTube videos about all the time. I love all of the intricacies that lead up to independent reading. I have such a passion for it. I also believe a really good teacher has to be a problem solver and think really quickly. There's a data piece that says that teachers make on the average 1,500 decisions a day, and that is more than a brain surgeon. So you got to be a good problem solver. But I also think teachers should be hardworking and creative and motivated solely by the successes of their students. In my Teacher of the Year interview in Charleston last month, I was asked to describe the ideal teacher evaluation system. And I think that's a really difficult task. It needs to be all-encompassing. You know, test scores should absolutely be a factor to show student academic success, but I'm much more interested in student yearly growth than just that end mark. I believe we need to be talking to students and parents as well. You know, how involved is this teacher with communication? Did your child feel motivated to succeed? Administration and other staff should have a say. How valued is this educator? What does this particular teacher bring to staff culture? So, you know, Trey, it's a pretty big task, but I think that final factor really is immeasurable.
Well, you know, it's almost like, how do you measure the immeasurable? I mean, it's almost, it is just an impossible task. I love the comparative analysis to the brain surgeon, though. Boy, that hits home. And so true. I mean, you know, it's just not things that people think about every day, how many decisions that you have to make in this position. Well, what is one way in which you'd like to see education in West Virginia move forward in the next 10 years?
Now, I know I'm the kindergarten teacher, and this is going to sound really corny, but I just want to see education move forward in West Virginia with joy. Joy. That's what we need to get back in our classrooms. Learning is magical, and our students are truly the center of that magic. I'd like to see us use the resources available to provide the strongest foundation for learning, mental health, social emotional learning, the use of technology, all of the tools that we already have. Let's get back to loving the classroom again. I really want to use peer mentorships as an opportunity to introduce students to the teaching field. I think it's a great way to address the teacher shortage that we have. You know, let's grow them here at home. Every year I house a group of fifth graders to mentor my students. I think Leanne's sons were a part of that. And, you know, having those fifth graders come in and work with my kindergartners, I mean, that brings joy back into the classroom and that excites me. I also have students from the Technical Education Center here in Mon County. They get to do a rotation in my classroom. So I think we need to open our classrooms up to these kinds of opportunities so we can expose our students to real world teaching experiences. I'm so passionate. I hope that you can catch on to that passion about education and learning. And I just want the focus in the next 10 years to center around the joy and magic of teaching. I think when we do that, the growth of our students in the teaching field will be absolutely evident.
Well, I must admit, I'm having a hard time picking up on your excitement.
Really?
You might need to work on that. I'm just kidding.
I know.
It's yes, obviously yes. Bubbles over.
Absolutely.
And the other thing, you know, I do think about what you're saying is so true, but I think it's something you see in life in general that, you know, when something is suddenly missing, you know, and people realize it's missing and then it comes back, there's such an excitement about it. And I think there is such an excitement about education. And I think people see and realize not only that they're excited about it, but the value of it and how important and how valuable it is to our society. And it's so great, I'm sure, to be a part of that. And I appreciate you highlighting that for us. You know, what a joyous experience it is, even through everything that this, you know, the world has been going through in the United States and in West Virginia, and even in the communities that we live in. And to see that excitement and joy, it is just so fulfilling. Leanne, I mean, you know,
I don't think it gets any better than that. We have wonderful educators who just want to bring joy back into the classroom for students here in West Virginia. So,
you mentioned early on as a disclosure there about that your boys had been in Amber's classroom. And I mean, my goodness, what a great feeling that has to be. I mean, don't you want all of your teachers to be this excited about education?
And
I think we see a lot of that now. And again, I think a lot of it is, you know, when it disappears, mm-hmm. and people are so anxious to get back, so excited about it, it just shows the value of it to us. Leanne, you know, the practice of law has been a second career for you. So could you describe the shift from education to education law and how your experience in education has shaped your legal practice?
Yes. Yeah, so I taught Spanish for about 10 years, and I feel so lucky to have had that time in the classroom. And I really think that teaching helps you learn to think on your feet and change directions at a moment's notice. Just like Amber said earlier, it teaches you to be a problem solver. And I think that that is really true. You never know what a student is going to kind of throw at you in the classroom. And as attorneys, we often have to field questions on the spot in kind of a similar way from judges and other attorneys. I think that my time in the classroom and as an educator was really good preparation for that. So teaching also forces you to present material in an understandable and a relatable way. And again, I think that that's a valuable tool for the legal profession as well. And it's a skill that I still use every day. I believe that it really doesn't matter how much you know if you're not communicating it in a way that's easy for someone to understand. I think that teaching really taught me to identify my audience, to pick out the most valuable information, what I call the takeaway, and to truly teach to that audience. So I try to offer people, whether it's a client or an attorney or a judge, the information that they need in a way that they can understand it. And finally, as a former teacher, I always kind of bear that experience in mind when I'm working with boards of education. I really feel like I had the unique opportunity to understand the school laws through the lens of a teacher. I've been on the transfer list. I've experienced some ups and downs in my teaching. And I think that I've experienced school law from the other side of the fence, so to speak. So I always try to keep that experience in mind and consider how school law and policies impact teachers and students.
Very good. You know, and Amber in conversation, she conveyed to us, you know, from her viewpoint, what she believed was other measures or indicators of a successful teacher's qualifications. What other factors might you believe are indicators of teacher success?
Well, one thing that's always been really important to me in teaching terms is what we call lifelong learning. So I've always believed that the desire to continue learning in your chosen field as a professional should be a constant quest. Teachers are always improving on their teaching practices, and that's a really great indicator of success. In truth, I believe that the desire to learn and develop professionally is key in education and the legal practice. I honestly believe we can't stop learning and developing as professionals, or we really just risk growing stagnant and outdated in these, you know, education and law are both changing fields. So like education, the law is an expansive field, and there are constant opportunities to gain just a bigger understanding of all the intricacies and to elevate the practice of law. So for me, I just think that commitment to lifelong learning is a great indicator of success.
Wonderful. Amber, I can't thank you enough for taking your time to give our listeners some very valuable insight regarding the ways teachers' success, especially in the eyes of a student, is truly immeasurable. And Leanne, just all of your experience, you know, that you have as a teacher, and then in that transition, you know, it gives you even a different perspective of other measures and indicators from the, you know, when we've participated in something and then now you're looking at it through a different lens as you are as an attorney, it kind of takes on a different look, but you can also bring all those things to the table to give us a deeper understanding of the other measures and indicators. And I just thank you both for sharing with us here today, you know, and really talking about how to measure the immeasurable. And, you know, just can't thank you enough for doing that and to help our listeners kind of hear that and see that through your eyes.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was really awesome to get to talk to both of you guys.
Yes, I agree. Anytime I can talk about education and law and students and my former colleague, I'm so happy to do it.
Yeah, it was a joy, right? Wasn't this a joy? Right. This is such a joy, guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you have any, there are lots of takeaways from this episode, but one that I had to make a note of was that kindergarten teachers make more decisions in a day than a brain surgeon. So if that doesn't put it in perspective for you, and also highlights the fact that it's just truly immeasurable. So thank you so much for joining us. And to our listeners, be sure and join us for another episode of the West Virginia Educast. We look at so many hot topics that are going on. We try to maintain, you know, a list of relevant things that you can take a look at and listen to. There are several episodes on our website now. I think this is going to be number 20 here. The ones that we've recorded, a couple have been two-parters, but so many different topics. This has been a great topic today for back to school. So we just encourage you to take a listen when you get a chance. And until then, I'm Trey Marone. This is the West Virginia Educast. Thank you all for taking a listen.